Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio. Welcome to Beer Me on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Sarah Jane. During my time in culinary school, I gained an appreciation for good beer and continued my studies in beer at grad school at NYU. Since then, I have been a beer director, beer bar general manager, and I get to continue to explore the beer world with all of you wonderful listeners. Every week, I will have a guest on the show to discuss different parts of the beer world, from brewers, importers, educators. This will allow us to examine the dynamic world of beer through different lenses. Whether you are new to beer or a seasoned professional, we will have something for you. So before we dive too much into the show, and I would like to welcome to the show Dr. Matthew Humbard, microbiologist, yeast wrangler, soon-to-be brewery owner. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So before we dive into our discussion today, there was some big news announced last week. I'm sure you saw it all over your social media feed, that Boston Beer Company, maker of Sam Adams, has acquired Dogfish Head Brewing for $300 million, and they announced on Thursday. I'm assuming you heard about this.
Yeah. I'm on the news.
You're on the news. Yeah. What do you think?
It's difficult to assess, as far as I can tell, if this is a good news or bad news for the industry.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense from Boston Beer Company's point of view. They don't have a very exciting brand, typically, and they've moved into things like seltzer and cider.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense that they would pick up another brewery. The choice is curious. Sam has said repetitively that he wouldn't sell to...
Sam from Dogfish Head. Yeah.
Yeah, Sam from Dogfish Head. That he wouldn't sell to like a Budweiser, InBev, or anything like that. But selling to or merging with another craft brand sort of saves his credibility there. But mm-hmm. I guess it remains to be seen, right? $300 million is a lot of sequench. So we'll see what happens. Yeah. My biggest concern from the merger is Boston Beer Company controls a lot of distribution, especially mm-hmm. up and down the East Coast. And I don't know if that's going to affect people's ability to get their beer on trucks as opposed to Dogfish Head's beer on trucks.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of money.
That is, yeah, for sure.
We'll see what happens. I know both companies, this was a mutual thing, so both companies will benefit from it, but mm-hmm. the community as a whole, we'll see.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if this kind of sparks other like major mergers between kind of larger producing craft beer makers, you know?
Yeah, it's very possible. Mm-hmm. There's been a few in the past that have been less visible because they haven't been quite as big. It would be hard to do one this big again, I think. There aren't very many competitors to Boston at their volume.
Yeah.
Especially now that they have Dogfish Head. But it's definitely possible. Maybe it's the era of consolidation. A lot of people think it'll strengthen the market because that company is now big enough to be a real competitor mm-hmm. globally. But I don't know. I'm usually worried about the five-barrel system on the corner.
Yeah. yeah, no. Well, we'll see how this unfolds. And so I want to talk a little bit about what you do and why it's important, right? So
okay.
Aside from your day job and where you do a lot of different things with the FDA, you are a microbiologist, trained microbiologist, and you do a lot of work with yeast. So recently, we were co-judges at the Pizza Paradiso homebrew competition.
Yeah.
And we had the episode 2 weeks ago, kind of announcing the winner and that kind of thing, which was very exciting. But you were describing to me the work that you do helping people kind of fix any kind of yeast problems, right?
Right. So with so many small breweries opening up lately, most of them don't have the budget to hire a scientist or they don't have the expertise in-house to do their own microbiology. And really, when a brewery is suffering quality control issues, it's 9 times out of 10 a microbiology problem. They either picked up a contaminant or they're mishandling their yeasts. And so we decided that we could provide that service, leveraging my experience as a bench scientist and a microbiologist and my long experience with the craft beer industry to help small breweries in the DC, Maryland area with their microbiology by literally showing up to their brewery and helping them by providing yeasts or by giving them advice or talking about their process to figure out how to improve it, improve their beer, and keep costs down.
So let's back up here. So if a brewery can't afford a lab or somebody to monitor the beer, can you talk people through what that looks like? You know, what that lab entails, how basic can it be, and, you know, kind of what are some things that you're looking for that are red flags?
Well, so very few breweries employ a staff that would run a lab.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good investment in general for a brewery to do so, because one of the most expensive ingredients that goes into a beer is pitchable yeast. Pitchable yeast is a yeast culture that's been grown to a specific volume for a specific beer. And there's no shortage of labs in the U.S. that'll do this for you, but they charge a lot to do it. I mean, in my opinion, they charge a lot to do it. A brewery could have a incubator or separate vessels, something to plate out yeast to purify it,
mm-hmm.
To keep their cultures pure and running for relatively little cost. But it requires someone to be able to recognize, say, like what a yeast looks like under a microscope, or to be able to use a microscope, or what a yeast colony looks like, how to do yeast counting or cell counting, how to propagate, how to calculate the propagation, how to check the propagation, how to recognize signs of infection, how to fix an infection, because there's a way to re-isolate yeast out of an infected batch, so you don't have to technically go buy it again.
All right, so we're going to continue to back up a little bit here just for the sake of listeners. So at the very beginning, yeast is vital to make beer.
Yes, it is. It is a requirement. It's a required ingredient to beer,
or
required component of beer.
Yeah. So beer is a fermented beverage, and mm-hmm. in order to ferment, you have to have yeast. That yeast eats the sugars, and for lack of a better phrase, poops out alcohol and CO2.
For the most part,
completely, you know, bastardized everything, but very, very, very basic.
Yep.
So yeast adds to the alcohol and to the carbonation, but it also adds to the aroma and to the flavor, correct?
Correct.
So how does it do that?
So different yeasts will make different secondary metabolites. So there's different kinds of compounds made during fermentation. The primary compounds made by Saccharomyces are ethanol and CO2. 99% of the carbon goes that direction.
Mm-hmm.
But different yeasts, different Saccharomyces even, will take a little bit of that and make other chemicals that they need for their own physiology and biology to build structures in their cells and different things. And those often have flavors and aromas. So a Hefeweizen yeast might make a chemical called isoamyl alcohol or isoamyl acetate, sorry. Mm-hmm. And isoamyl acetate smells like bananas.
Yes.
That is a metabolic dead end for the cell, and so it can't do a whole lot with that compound, but it makes it in low quantities and we can perceive it.
Yeah, so that's why a benchmark smell for Hefeweizen. You smell it, it's going to smell like banana, cloves, bubblegum, and that is because of the yeast.
That's because the yeast is making specific compounds called esters that humans can smell, mm-hmm. and they smell things like bubblegum or clove and banana and things like that. That's a very small part of the physiology. Mm-hmm. So you can have two strains that are almost genetically identical, both Saccharomyces, and ferment them on the same wort, and they end up smelling and tasting different because of parts per million differences in these compounds. And so a Saison might make a lot of pepper, mm-hmm. but American ale yeast might make close to nothing.
Yeah.
Right.
So basically, when you're brewing beer, whether you're a home brewer or whether you are producing beer professionally, typically you buy yeast, correct, from a company?
Yeah, that's...
at least in the beginning.
Yeah, so almost everybody buys yeast from mm-hmm. one of the yeast labs that stores and propagates these different strains of Saccharomyces.
And they do this because you want to get a consistent, clean yeast.
Correct, and it's available.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is expensive, you had mentioned?
It can be, depending on the size of the batch, it can be hundreds of dollars a batch to $1,000 a batch of beer to buy a certified pitch of yeast.
Now, what are the dangers of using a yeast that is unknown?
What do you mean by unknown?
Like, you didn't buy it from a lab, you don't have a lab yourself. What can go wrong with yeast?
So, not all yeasts are suited well for beer brewing.
Mm-hmm.
So, a long time ago, people used to use bread yeast to make beer, and it works, but bread yeast has a lot of additional off flavors that you don't pick up in bread because you bake bread, and since you raise the temperature of bread to 300-400 degrees, a lot of that stuff evaporates. But you don't bake beer, right? So mm-hmm. the fermentation is a cold side process, so it happens after all the boiling of the wort and everything, and so you get less evaporation. And so if you get higher order alcohols like pentanol or something like that, or octanol, those taste sort of like gasoline to humans.
Okay.
And you can get those flavors from a random yeast. And so if you're not curating your yeasts, you're not going to get the end product that you want. And we live in a great time where we have access to hundreds of different yeasts, and they all have slightly different flavor profiles, and so you can play with them a lot. But if you're just going to randomly pick up a yeast from a flour or your bottle of bread yeast or wherever, you have no idea what the flavor profile of that yeast is going to be.
Okay, so that it means inconsistency, and everything else that you put into the beer, the malt, water, the hops, the space, the time, all of that costs money.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're putting in a product that's all of a sudden going to leave everything up to chance, and then you could end up with gasoline garbage, then you've wasted all this time, you waste all this money.
Right.
Okay.
That's why people don't do it.
Exactly. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Dr. Matthew Humbard. Thank you. And Beer Me Radio on Full Service Radio. Welcome back to Beer Me on Full Service Radio, broadcasted live at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I am your host, Sarah Jane, welcoming to the studio Dr. Matthew Humbard, a microbiologist, avid home brewer, talented yeast wrangler, and soon-to-be brewery owner. So we were just kind of talking about the importance of yeast that is consistent and clean, and why you don't dump bread yeast into beer making. So let's kind of step back a little bit more, and again, this is probably all very elementary for you, but how do you culture yeast?
Yeah, yeast is actually pretty easy to grow.
Okay.
It's usually, the trick is usually to not grow it rather than to grow it. So you can either, our process right now is to either isolate a yeast from a bottle of beer or get it from a laboratory that's been working with it, and we propagate it on either solid or liquid media. So we make basically weak wort at home using dry malt extract or other yeast nutrients, and then we propagate it in a flask or test tubes. We can pour petri dishes and streak them out on the plate to get isolated colonies. It's not a difficult thing to grow. It grows on anything with a simple sugar source. So maltose, mm-hmm. usually, is what it likes. But it can ferment a lot of different kinds of sugars, simple sugars.
So the work that you do for breweries, can you kind of explain what that is and why it's done?
Sure. The work that we're doing in our pilot program with the breweries we're working with is that we have either obtained yeast from our travels or from laboratories or from bottles of beer or from our individual work in laboratories. And we purify the yeast down to an appropriate level, usually to a single colony. And then we propagate it up to a pitchable amount and then provide that pitchable amount to the brewery. So the breweries tell us their brewing schedule about 4 to 6 weeks ahead of time, and we raise and stagger the deliveries to their brew schedule.
So you have this library of yeast, all these different kinds of yeast from all these different places that are going to impart different flavors and aromas to beer.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens when there is a brewery that is having an issue with yeast?
So if a brewery is having an issue with yeast,
how does that translate to the guest?
Oh, it'll just be a bad flavored beer.
Okay.
Or either an overcarbonation, or if you're looking at like a bottle, if a contamination oftentimes will manifest itself as an overcarbonation, mm-hmm. like a gusher, or an off flavor in the final product, something that's not supposed to be there, that's not adding to the experience positively. And then it's also just bad control.
Yeah.
Right? If you're not exerting control over your microbiological system, then randomness is getting in and you're going to have a problem eventually. And so if a brewery is having a problem, the first step is to figure out where the problem is, right? And so you can try to map where the contamination is, and it's really just about understanding the process. So what hoses do you use? What valves do you use? How do you clean your system? What chemicals are you using? How long? What temperature? Are you opening and closing your valves while you're cleaning? So you're cleaning both sides of the valve, that kind of stuff.
Wow.
And so understanding that is how to find the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Once you find the problem, you adjust their process. You adjust their knowledge, just the baseline knowledge of the brewery. Like, these are the things that matter for an industrial system where you can't just completely disassemble it and scald it all with boiling water. Here's the times and temperatures and chemicals that work for this kind of contamination. And then let's talk about your yeast hygiene, your yeast management, and how your brewery hygiene works with this process.
Okay. So how does yeast management work when you're a brewer?
So yeast management is really just about knowing what organisms you need, mm-hmm. and keeping them pure. And you can purify yeasts or bacteria, because we can do either, any number of ways. You can either have a process that makes you confident in their purity and then check them either through genetic methods or physical methods of repurifying them or looking at them under a microscope. There's lots of ways depending on how much you want to spend.
I gotcha. So during the brewing process, you know, let's say if a brewery does have a lab or they do have somebody who is trained, is it during the fermentation process that they are taking samples and looking at it, you know, under a microscope or that
yes.
kind of thing? Okay.
So if you have a microbiologist on hand, mm-hmm. there'll be real-time sampling of the product for both fermentation health, which is something most breweries don't monitor for, but probably should, fermentation health and for contamination.
Okay.
And so contamination is a very complicated problem right now because of things like diastaticus yeast, which are Saccharomyces strains that secrete additional enzymes that continue to ferment the beer even after the yeast has been removed,
mm.
or continue to break down the beer, break down the lager chain, sugars, so fermentation can continue past when people think it's stopped. But that's become a very large problem because it's not even a contamination. It's just like an extra activity. But you can monitor for all of this in real time. And so you would be taking samples a few days after pitching to make sure the yeast count is fine.
So, and what does that look like? So you're taking a sample and you're putting it on a slide. And you have to bear in mind, I'm thinking of this, you know, as a fourth grader who has like, you know, put a drop of something on a slide and put the little plastic piece on top of it and put it under the microscope. Am I so far
That's
accurate?
About it.
Okay. And then looking down through the microscope, you know, what are you looking for?
Yeah, so you add a dye,
mm-hmm.
and the dye differentially stains live and dead cells.
Okay.
And so the darker ones are dead, the lighter ones are alive. So you count how many cells. So the slides you use are called hemicytometers. They're used to count blood cells, basically. When you go to the doctor,
mm-hmm.
or the emergency room, they say, give me a CBC, which is a complete cell count, right? Complete blood count. And so they take a slide and they look at the blood under and they count how many blood cells there are and what kinds of blood cells there are. And it's the same thing with yeast. You just put them on the slide and you count how many are alive and dead. And then you calculate the percentage live, percentage dead, and how many active cells there are per milliliter
mm-hmm.
of fermentation. And then there's an optimal range that you need to be in to hit your targets.
Okay. And that lets you know kind of where you are in fermentation.
Right.
Okay.
How healthy the fermentation is, how likely you are to hit your target.
Okay. And there are things you can do to combat any kind of issues.
You can add more yeast.
Okay. Or... Yeah. You can stop the fermentation process at some point if you need to.
No, I mean, once you start, you can't really stop the fermentation process with yeast without filtering out all the yeast.
Yeah.
And no one's going to do that. From a practical point of view for a brewery, there's almost no such thing as over-pitching. You can only miss low.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really miss high. But there's a lot of reasons why you would want to monitor the yeast health. If you're doing especially high gravity beer, you can get things like dilution shock or osmotic shock to yeast where there's just too much sugar and they can go dormant to protect themselves. And so you have to monitor, those are the types of things you have to monitor. A lot of mixed fermentation beers that are fermented with a bacteria and a yeast will have a lower pH than mm-hmm. the yeast is used to. And so they can go into acid shock and they can stop behaving themselves on that end.
Yeah.
And they'll go dormant and they'll look dead under a microscope. And so these are things that you can monitor. If you're just doing an IPA and that's all you do, like you're an IPA house and you're always pitching a very simple yeast, then it's probably overkill to check every batch every time. But there are breweries that do it.
Yeah. And there are breweries that have their own proprietary yeast.
Some.
Okay. Now, you are in the process of opening up a brewery.
Yes.
Patent Brewing Company, yes?
Patent Brewing Company,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. So, obviously, you're going to have the best yeast around town.
That's true.
but what is the idea behind the brewery?
Yeah, so the idea behind Patent is to almost be a showroom for the brewing industry and for people to come see what different yeasts can do in beer. Right, so it'll be a small brewery, with the tap room someplace in Maryland. We haven't finalized our location yet. Still searching. But it'll be a laboratory and a brewery, so people can come and get the Pilsner we like, made with the yeast we brought back from Germany, and get a Saison we like from one of the 20 Saison strains we have. And brewers can come there and try beers made with organisms that only we have, and order those yeasts from us to use in their own space.
Oh,
or
wow.
Discuss with us their process and their needs from a chemical, microbiological point of view.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It's like a showroom.
Okay. For yeast.
For yeast. And for hops. Because we are doing a lot of hop chemistry, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, explain away, please.
So we've started working with basically essential oil distillation of hops.
Okay.
To extract out the aroma fractions from hops without any of the chlorophyll or any of the tannins that come along with dry hopping. Mm-hmm. I think dry hopping is a very popular practice in the industry, but it's done in a very inefficient way.
Okay.
And it wastes beer and it wastes money.
So can you just explain real quick, one sentence, dry hopping and how it's inefficient?
So dry hopping is the addition of hops to a finished beer. Usually hops are soaked in a fermenter with a finished beer for about a week, and then the beer is packaged from that tank, or filtered, moved out of that tank, filtered, and then packaged. So you're putting the raw plant material into the beer to extract only the aroma fraction out. And the aroma in hops is a collection of oils that are somewhat soluble in ethanol, but not soluble in water. So you can extract out the dry hop fraction that way. And so the plant material soaks up a lot of beer, and it adds a week of time in the fermentation tank. And
so you're losing volume and time.
You're losing volume and time. And so if you extract out that oil fraction and just add it to the liquid, you don't add any time and you don't lose any volume. So that's what the process we're working on right now.
And so how would this be? This extract would just be simply added to the finished product before...
Yeah. Put it in the packaging tank.
Okay. Cool. That's a lot easier.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for coming in and chatting about yeast and dealing with all of my fourth grade level biology questions.
Yeah, no problem.
So check out Patton Brewing Company when you have a chance. You also have a really awesome podcast that does a much, much deeper look into the science of brewing.
Yeah, I'm the co-host of the Milk the Funk, the podcast, and so you can Google that.
Yeah,
and it comes up pretty quickly. It's a podcast about what's the tagline? The science of mixed fermentation of beer, wine, mead, and cider. Something like that.
Yeah, no, you nailed it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like I'm on the show. Yeah, I'm the scientific advisor for the show. And so there's three hosts, and we release a episode about every month, a little bit less than every month, but it's a long form podcast, so.
Yeah, definitely, you know, something to dig into for sure. So yeah, check out, you know, keep your eyes open for Patton Brewing Company. And Matt, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So this has been Beer Me on Full Service Radio, recorded live at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Sarah Jane. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, reach out on Instagram at Beer Me Radio or via email, beermeradio@gmail.com. Thank you all very much. We'll see you next week. Cheers.